This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. Tony Tucker, the author of The Visitor's Guide to the City of London Churches, took me to a church that sits right in the middle of the Square Mile, just off Bank Junction. So, we're on the corner of King William Street and Lombard Street, and opposite, on the other side of the road, is really one of the most masculine and stern looking of city churches, in my view. It's Sir Mary Woolnoth. Can you tell me a bit about the exterior? I mean, I've put my own impression on it, but what would you say?
Named possibly after a Saxon founder called Woolnoth, or maybe after the wool market that stood opposite. No one knows. So it's an old church, but yes, you're right. The exterior is quite different from anything else. Quite unlike a church. Horizontal cuttings to make it look grand and powerful,
yeah.
With great Tuscan columns on either side, and then up above, composite classical columns and two little turrets on the top. It doesn't look like a church at all. Very original. And of course it's Hawksmoor, and he was very original. He was a student, an employee of Wren trained him. This is his only church in the city. He created a number of others just outside the city in the East End. It's also the only church in the city above a railway station, because it's above the Bank Booking Hall. And famously, when the Northern Line, when that was built in the late 1890s, they were going to destroy this church, and they compromised by letting the underground build its hall underneath the church, and they removed everything from the vaults. All the bodies from burials over the centuries were taken down to Manor Park in Ilford, the city's cemetery down there,
yeah.
And those included Edward Lloyd, who was buried here. Edward Lloyd, the founder of Lloyds of London, the insurance group. There's a blue plaque in Lombard Street just next door here where Lloyds of London Coffee House stood, and he was buried here.
As with many city churches, there's a little coffee shop, which seems to be quite common in, well, some churches having coffee shops inside and many on the outside having a little sort of coffee booth in the churchyard. I suppose it gets people through the doors, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
The motivation, I'm pretty certain, by the church is it brings in money, because these folks will pay for the privilege of being able to sell their coffee in the churchyards, and you get them in, as you rightly say, a lot of churchyards out in front of St Mary Abbe Church, right in front of St Mary Aldermary.
Dunstan in the West,
there's little coffee shops everywhere.
Many great institutions, including Lloyds of London that Tony has referenced already, began their lives in or as coffee shops, and many of them were based in the area around St Mary Woolnoth. So I thought it'd be a good idea to see how religion and coffee today sit side by side in a part of London that has such a historic connection with this divine drink.
My name is Melina Herman, and I am the owner of the Cozy Coffee Corner that has been established in St Mary Woolnoth Church since 2014. The previous owner of this business, he was an Italian gentleman who was the pioneer of the little coffee carts in churchyards. So it started around 2008. That's when I started working for him.
Yeah.
And we used to be based outside in one of those little coffee carts. And then he moved back to his country, and I saw a good opportunity to take the business to the next level. So a lot of changes have happened since then. Then in 2015, we were invited to move inside the church, and that's when I founded the Cozy Coffee Corner, which is a very descriptive name to this little coffee shop. It's very cozy.
Can you tell us where the coffee shop now is?
So the coffee shop is at the entrance of St Mary Woolnoth Church, and it's an 8 square meter shop. It's very small, and I think the biggest challenge was to create a space that respects the fabric of this building, okay? Because it's a nearly 300-year-old building, so we can't drill any holes, we can't paint any walls, so we just literally have to create the space that works with the building, respecting every aspect of it. We're all very, very obsessed with the beauty and the symmetry of this building, very Hawksmoor style. So it's amazing, and I think I'm very blessed. You know.
It escaped damage in the Great Fire. Wren just patched it up, but some years later it fell into disrepair, and Hawksmoor rebuilt the entire thing between about 1716, 1724, something like that.
The church was rebuilt as part of an Act of Parliament called the New Churches of London and Westminster Act, 1710. The aim was to build 50 churches to manage the increasing population of London, and no doubt, in an age of dissension, to encourage people into Anglican buildings. This was one of 12 that were eventually built under this Act. And unusually, this one was a rebuild rather than a brand new one.
It's since that time never had any real damage. It escaped both world wars. The Victorians had a little bit of a go inside and changed some things, but it's pretty original, and the exterior is exactly as Hawksmoor left it, with a great clock over Lombard Street.
This clock is the same one mentioned by T.S. Eliot in his Wasteland poem. T.S. Eliot worked in Lloyd's Bank nearby, so he would have been familiar with St. Mary Woolnoth. Thank you for talking about the exterior and telling me about the name as well. Shall we go in?
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Hi. So we've come into St. Mary Woolnoth.
As you can see instantly, quite different from Wren. This is a Hawksmoor church, much bigger and more powerful. To me, lacks some of the delicate sense of beauty of Wren, but he was nonetheless a great architect. It's not very big, but you feel it's big because these pillars, these columns are massive. The ceiling is way up there and everything is so powerful. For one thing, it's sort of pretty much square. It's like an ambulatory around the outside of the nave.
Yeah.
And everything is dominated by this huge entablature of the frieze and everything above, supported on four groups of three classical columns with the acanthus leaves carved at the top.
It's almost like being in the middle of a temple.
Yeah, it is. But I guess it's probably as tall as it is long. It's,
yes.
It's almost like a cube.
What strikes me is that you come in, that three of the four walls don't have windows. Only the south wall does have the four high-up windows there. But the light comes flooding in from the lanterns above the central nave. That's where all the light comes in from there. It's an unusual use of light, really.
The reredos is by Hawksmoor, and it's not one of these wooden carved reredoses of Grinling Gibbons or William Emmett, who were used by Wren. This is more like a baldacchino, reminiscent of that baldacchino above the altar in St. Peter's in Rome, with turned black balusters supporting a frieze with seven cherubs' heads in gold. The Victorians did change one or two things. Notably, and this always puzzles me in the church, if you look around the walls, you'll see what look like gallery fronts. Originally, this church had galleries, and bizarrely, the Victorian restorer, William Butterfield, took the galleries down. But instead of getting rid of the face of the galleries altogether, he mounted them against the walls, rather strangely. The other bizarre thing is that when you look in the corners, you'll see two doors. They are the doors into the old galleries with the pews up above. But of course, there are no galleries now, so those doors just open onto nothing. And if they weren't locked and you stepped through them, I think you'd get rather a shock as you fell 20 feet to the church below.
I've never noticed
It's bizarre.
And how different it would have been with those galleries, actually, because it would have felt more claustrophobic,
But the other thing, the pulpit and the tester or sounding board above it are original by Hawksmoor, early 18th century. But Butterfield lowered the pulpit and raised the tester, so it looks rather tall and bizarre. It's not as Hawksmoor originally intended it, but it is original.
Is there anything else of note here? I mean, there is an organ loft above the door, but not very big.
There are two organs, as you can see. There's one that's stuck into the north aisle. The Victorians liked them in the north aisle and took a lot of them down from their proper place in the west. It's allegedly originally a Father Smith organ, the great organ maker of the late 17th century. Another feature, there are two tapestries hanging up in the front of the church, and they show two saints,
and they are saints connected with local churches whose parishes were amalgamated with this or united with this one.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is St. Nicholas, and that represents St. Nicholas Acons, which was knocked down many years ago. The other one is St. Edmund, as in St. Edmund the King and Martyr, whose church is 100 yards or so up Lombard Street. Other nice features, plaque on the wall to John Newton, famous as the rector here in the late 18th, early 19th century. And he, of course, was the man whose sermons famously inspired William Wilberforce to lead the campaign against the slave trade, which was abolished in 1807. And a lot of the credit for that goes to Wilberforce and to John Newton.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, the motivation for that came from this very church.
Interesting.
We open and close the building every day. We make sure that the place is safe, the lights are on. We welcome all the visitors. It's a very historical site for the City of London.
So you're almost like a gatekeeper for the people who
yes,
come in.
Yes, we are, exactly.
As well as providing them with a nice refreshment when
exactly.
they come in.
So it's a win-win situation. They gave us the opportunity to set business here, and I think in exchange, this is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, not only we contribute with revenue to the building to keep it alive and safe, but we look after it. We feel part of it.
You were talking about the community. Who are they? What are these people like who come in?
So basically, funny enough, they're bankers, right? They have very stressful lives and jobs, so they work under a lot of pressure. So I think it's just a familiar face to come and say hello before going to the office, and, you know, they do their work, and then in the middle of the day they come here and they just like to sit down inside the church, do a little unwind, grab a little cup of coffee before going back to their lives as well. So it's good for them, and it's amazing for us as well that we're able to, you know, give love and care, you know, and coffee was the vehicle that we found, you know, to reach out to people.
The tiny and cosy coffee shop in the small entrance to St. Mary Woolnoth is a warm welcome into what looks on the outside like the City of London's most austere church. But once inside, the light and space will win you over. If it's not just coffee you worship, there is Holy Communion on Tuesday at lunchtime and an informal service on Thursday at lunchtime. And if you miss those, it's well worth worshipping or enjoying the peace and quiet and the quirky features that you will find here at any time during the week.